Friends, I just did my annual economic briefing with author and Swiss America chairman Craig R. Smith, and what I discovered confirms my worst fears. Something is getting ready to happen that's going to change the course of world history, and not one in a thousand will believe it until it's already too late, and I don't want that to be you. After writing four important books accurately predicting the future of gold, oil, the dollar, and inflation, Mr. Smith is on the verge of releasing his next book, and this new CD covers the root issue of the coming crisis and offers three critical steps to protect your family from the fallout. Please call today for this hot new CD, The Future of Money. Toll free, 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. You've got to hear The Future of Money to believe it. 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. Do it today.
Raw Nation's Hot Rocks is the only raw, vegan, certified organic vitamin for your sex drive. Hot Rocks is made using only the purest organic superfoods and herbs in their raw, unaltered state. We've created this synergistic blend of powerful herbs that intensifies sexual energy and performance in both men and women. It's like an overall vitality pill that makes you feel amazing. There's absolutely no chemicals, pesticides, or harsh stimulants in Hot Rocks. If you already have a strong sex drive, Hot Rocks will help you maintain it and keep it from slipping away. The problem that affects even the healthiest people nowadays because of the amount of toxicity that we are all exposed to. So what are you waiting for? We offer a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can order Hot Rocks risk-free. It's time to experience pure bliss and the only truly healthy libido enhancer on the market, Hot Rocks. Order online at hotrocks.com. That's HOTRAWKS.com or call us 855-RAW-LIFE. That's 855-729-5433.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created Webseed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
If I ever go looking for my heart's desire again, I won't look any further than my own backyard.
And think to yourself, there's no place like home.
There's no place like home.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
That's right. You've landed on Homegrown Health with Joni Cox, a show about everything and anything pertaining to home, including parental rights, home birthing, homeschooling, and even raising homegrown kids naturally.
But just try to stay out of my way. Just try. I'll get you, my pretty.
Do you presume to criticize the great Oz? Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Content in this program is not intended to diagnose or treat any ailment or illness and is for educational purposes only. It's Homegrown Health on Natural News Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Homegrown Health. I'm Joni Cox, right here on naturalnewsradio.com. Hope you're having a great day today. We sure are. We have been touring and visiting and helping harvest and feed animals here at Epiphany Farms. Now, if you remember last week, I talked about the farm-to-fork restaurant called Station 220, and that's in Bloomington, Illinois, or Central Illinois. If you're anywhere near, I highly suggest you stop in and eat there and talk to the owners, Ken Mishka, his wife Nanam, and Stu Hummel. They are fantastic young men and a young woman. They have such a vision for true agriculture and for pioneering in this old way of farming, but we've lost our way so much here in the West and around the world with the high technology that they have in conventional agriculture. So they really wanted to literally return to their roots and start a restaurant where they serve everything that's made local, everything that's grown locally and grown right here on their farm. So we promised them we'd come by and I'd bring my kiddos and we'd have a homegrown health day at Epiphany Farms. And we have done just that. We're having a blast. Can everybody say hi?
Hi.
And all three of the girls are here. Some of the guys are still out working. And we decided to come in out of the heat and do the show. So can everybody say hi? Introduce yourself. Tell your name and how old you are.
I'm four.
What's your name?
Briella.
Do you like being on the show?
Yes.
Have you been on the show before?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, next I'm going to have...
I'm Raina Cox, and I'm 8 and a half.
Yes, and you are. You're actually more like 8 3/4 because you have a birthday coming up, don't you?
Yeah.
And this is your first time on the show.
Yes, it is.
And I have another returning guest.
Hi, I'm Mallory, and I'm 11.
Awesome. So we've been to other farms before, no problem. But I don't know that we've been as hands-on there as we've been able to be here. Briella, what was some of your favorite things about being at Epiphany Farms today?
I got to pick tomatoes, and I got to pet goats, pigs, and...
You got to see, remember the baby?
And I got to see a baby goat.
A baby goat and a baby... calf.
And baby calf.
Yeah. Mommy, I think, just had her about a week ago. Hey, Raina, tell me, what was your favorite thing about being at Epiphany Farms today?
Well, one of my favorite things was gathering eggs from the chickens. And I really, really liked... Matt told me that chickens really like tomatoes, so I threw them a few, and they all gathered around and ate it.
Yeah, because while we're harvesting tomatoes, we throw some of the bad ones out to the chickens, right? And that's a great way to compost yucky tomatoes and make use of them.
Yeah, and some of the good ones you can throw out, they don't all throw out the bad ones.
They just like any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, chickens eat almost anything, don't they? Did you ever ask them what kind of chickens they have?
No.
Oh, it's okay. We'll go ask them.
But they can eat green tomatoes, too.
They can eat green grass, too.
Uh-huh.
And grubs in the grass.
And now, they can eat corn?
Yes, they can. What was the funny thing we saw eat corn today?
A dog.
And can I tell you something? The chickens can eat dirt, too.
Yeah, they can. They can. This dog is an awesome dog here. His name's Hogan. And he went ahead and took a piece of raw corn right for himself. Mallory, what was your favorite thing about being on the farm today?
Oh, well, let me think. There was a lot of things I did. I think my favorite one was gathering eggs with Stu.
Yeah.
Even though if you pecked you, it's kind of like a little soft thud. You know, it doesn't really hurt. So that was one of my favorite things. And then... we picked some tomatoes and we ate it. It was funny. The tomatoes were sitting out in the heat so long. I took one and I ate one, and some of the hot juice went down my throat. And I'm like,
I have stains on my shirt from all the tomatoes that I ate.
Yeah, we all do.
Stains and seeds.
Yeah. So see, there was these two set of goats. One's the mom and one's the baby. The baby lives somewhere else by the farm and by the house. And it's kind of skittish with these other two, but that's her baby, one of the goat's baby, and she really likes me and Raina. I mean, you know, when we halfway are there to her, she would just come up and ready for you to pet her. And I keep trying to catch the baby duck, but not going so well.
Do you think the baby duck or the mama duck would like me?
Yeah, probably if they started to settle down.
Yeah, if they could ever settle down, we could always ever get to them. Raina, what do you want to say?
Well, another favorite part was when me and Mal were petting and loving on the goat, all the pigs started running up to me, but I didn't get a chance to pet him because I couldn't find my gloves.
I pet him without my gloves, a pig, out my gloves, and a goat.
It was the dirty pig.
I pet a goat and a pig without any gloves.
What was the mama pig like?
The mama pig was like, she had a wolf with her hair,
And she lived in the mud.
And another favorite part was when me and Mal picked a few vegetables, maybe like a few grass pieces, and we fed it to the goats, and they really liked it.
There's about three or four goats that all look alike, but how I know that the baby's mama is the baby's mama is because she has this cheetah-looking print on her right leg, so, yeah.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Oink, oink, oink. That was the pig say. Oink, oink, oink. Nah, nah.
Nah, nah is the goat. Mm-hmm. So, no, thank you for sharing your stories with me today. Are you hoping to come back, or maybe we could just do this at our house?
No, I would like to come back.
Me too.
No, so you don't we have chickens in the garden of our house?
It's going to take a while, so. Nanam, I helped her with the kitchen and stuff, and we helped her, we cleaned forks since they kind of just moved in.
I'm so glad they had a lot of fun at the farm. We're going to take a short break here real quick, and when we return, I'm going to talk to Matt. He is Matt Mishka, Ken Mishka's younger brother, and he is the farmhand here at Epiphany Farms. We're going to have some more talk and chat about what's going on behind the scenes here. Stay tuned and welcome aboard to Homegrown Health. That's HolisticDiva.com. They're our new sponsor. They sure are super supportive of the show, and we appreciate your support and appreciate your interest in Homegrown Health, as well as everything that you do, too. We'll be right back.
Attention Earthlings, your planet is sick, you are sick, but do not despair. There is hope, there are choices, and you can live and heal in harmony with nature. Live well, be well. Join the mission at HolisticDiva.com, a blog about natural health, natural living, mind, body, and spiritual growth, inspiration, and unity. Find out how you can be a part of Holistic Diva events and giveaways coming soon. Be the change. Visit HolisticDiva.com today.
Yes, and thanks once again to Holistic Diva for proudly supporting Homegrown Health on NaturalNewsRadio.com, where the best in health talk radio lives. I'm your host, Joni Cox. And as promised, I sat down with Matt Mishka to talk about what goes on behind the scenes at a farm-to-fork restaurant from the farm side of things. Matt Mishka, you're Ken's brother, and you've been on the farm how long now?
I've been here since March.
March, okay. This year?
This year.
This year. How do you like it?
I love it.
And you have a history in agriculture anyway, but it's more conventional agriculture. Tell me what you used to do.
We used to have an Angus seed stock operation.
Okay.
And we had 300 head of Angus cattle, and we would graze them to sell to other farms for their herd.
So it's because they were purebred and
yes,
things like that,
purebred.
Right? So what were some of the precautionary things that you had to do in order to take care of such a delicate herd of cattle?
Well, health is the main concern. Although we did vaccinate, which I'm against, and seeing how it's done. But its health is the main thing, and herd health, just watching the herd as they grow,
yeah,
as they come along. And that's what makes it fun, watching the little ones come into themselves. And
right, and become a big, strong, robust little cow.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you see the difference between vaccinated cattle and non-vaccinated cattle? Because this is an area that I talk a lot about in vaccine education and even in humans and human babies. So what was some of the things that you noticed, the difference?
Well, I think it's like with anything else. You can vaccinate, and you know, eventually they're overcome it, and they're going to find ways, the bacteria and the different things they can catch is going to overcome it. And they have different things that come on. It's genetic, and like curly calf syndrome or different syndromes you get. And it's because of this, it's the vaccination and it's the crossbreeding, and it's all that in one. Whereas if you go all natural and you might have one come down with something, a respiratory disorder for one thing. We were all big on every calf that we had. You give it a respiratory pill. You put a pill down its throat, and it's for respiratory prevention.
Oh, okay. So you were giving the cattle antibiotics?
Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Whereas if you didn't give them anything, out of 300 cows that calve, you might have two with that illness. But instead, you give it to every one of them.
Right.
And then I just think when that cow comes in, or that calf comes in, and you breed her, and she's a bred heifer, and then she has calf, then it goes down, then you do the same thing with that one, and just by the time you get down to the third line, it's going to get that respiratory disease either way, because it's the disease has found its way against it.
Wow.
So yeah. Now another antibiotic comes out and they try a new thing. And
right. So you see how working its way down the line that it's really weakened the immune system instead of built them up and made them stronger. That's interesting to think about that we're even treating humans kind of like cattle. It's amazing that.
And it's all a test. It's like, well, we don't know, but, you know, studies have shown.
Yeah, and the studies that are paid, the studies that are paid for by the pharmaceutical companies and stuff.
Oh, exactly. It's like, I don't agree with it. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. So, was it really hard for you to make that change from a conventional agricultural aspect to, more organic and natural and, counter big ag farming practices?
Oh, not at all. I just like all natural. I mean, it just feels better. That's the way I've always liked it anyway. And I think the problem is a lot of people, they don't know any different.
Right.
And like say you're brought up and this is how you do things. This is how your dad did things. His dad did things. Well, that's the way I do things. And you might even take offense to it if someone says, well, introduces a new way.
Right.
And that's what's happening. It's not really a new way. It's the old way before, but people have been trained so much that it seems different. But really,
it was the first way, right.
And it
was
it's how the only way that will make it last.
It's neat, and I love seeing you. You're young, and you're excited about what you're doing. You're excited to help your brother. You're excited for what he's building. And for me, it's always important to be a part of the bigger picture, doing something with my life that really matters in the final end of things. It's got an eternal consequence. It has an eternal mark. You know, if we can leave our mark and our fingerprint on this earth, then this is what we're all contributing to. So tell me, what's one of your favorite things about being at Epiphany Farms?
I like watching the changes as the seasons change, the growing changes, as with the animals too. And everything's different. Everything, you know, and with the seasons I'm seeing, I can't wait to see winter and what that has to bring.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm most impressed with the fact that you know when all of these animals are ovulating. Like from a woman's standpoint, that's really awesome when you meet a guy more interested in ovulation than you are. It's pretty cool. He pulled out his iPhone. We were talking about the pigs because you have some real interesting pigs here. The woman pig really tends to the male pig. It's something, kind of interesting. He just kind of lays there. And anyway, we were talking about how she was getting ready to go into heat, and he's like, let me check my phone. Oh, yes, let's see. Wednesday is when she's supposed to come into heat in the fall.
Gives me something to look forward to.
I guess. It's a busy time on the farm when the ladies go into heat, right?
Figure out whether I'm going to get a show or not that day.
So, yeah, I was really impressed with that. And you do this, and that is the level of care, though, that I'm talking about that you have with the animals and the relationship that you have with them. And you know when they should, yep, right about time she should go into heat, or they're going to be breeding right around this time. We were talking about the moon.
Oh, absolutely. You're asking about if it changes the behavior in the animals, and I think it does. And I told you out there that when you're going to wean, cattle, and a lot of times do it at 6 months, and you wean them, and they say, the old timers say, if it's a full moon,
right,
they're gonna holler and bellow less, and they're gonna make less noise at night. And granted, it could be because it's the full moon; they can see their mothers if you have them close. But a lot of people say, even if you put them in a barn, separated completely, it's just an old
wives' tale. Yeah. But that you think might have some true bearings.
Absolutely.
To it.
Even like I said, like even with fishing, fishing gets better, and I have fishing schedules that are based on the moon pattern.
Right. That's interesting. And like, we talked about women cycling through the moon too. So I think that it's all everything, nature, we're all symbiotic. It all just kind of flows really naturally in and among it and with it. And so, yeah, that's awesome. Well, you want to touch base on something like a neat experience that you've had here or something that you've gotten to experience here that you haven't experienced anywhere else?
Well, it's family, and it's life. It's back to the basics and back to, it's wholesome and it's real, and it's everyone giving their hardest, their best effort and caring about each other.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing. You can care for the animals. You take so much care in all the plants, caring in each other.
Right. It's going to change how you are as a person.
Absolutely.
If you let
and your neighbors as well. And I think that's where it starts. It has to start somewhere. And then you take care of yourself and your family, and then you take care of your neighbors, you take care of their neighbors,
yep.
And then all of a sudden it all starts working together, and we're no longer heading towards the doom, we're actually climbing ourselves out of the hole, and That's where it has to start.
Right, and then fixing what's wrong with the lack of love and responsibility that we have for one another. That's awesome. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm talking with Emma, and she's a farmhand here, I guess we could call you that, at Epiphany Farms. You've helped out for several years in a row.
Okay, just fix it.
Okay. Tell me who you are.
2 years ago, I interned for them over the summer, and so then just every year, I've kind of come back to see how things are going and developing and
see the growth.
Say
and
hello.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, how have things changed since you were here 2 years ago?
What hasn't changed? I mean, they have moved farms. They have a restaurant. You can tell that the way that they are going about everything has just really streamlined and seems to be getting more and more effective with each season.
Yeah. What was the farm like when you first moved, when you were first helping them, when you first interned?
Well, the weather was a complete opposite of what we're having this summer. It was torrential downpours for all of spring, pretty much. And so getting things into the ground was really difficult, and just being able to work the soil was a challenge. And there was no restaurant at that time, so is really just the beginnings of everything.
Yeah, the farm itself is so much work.
Yeah.
And then now, what was your reaction when you found out they had a restaurant?
I was excited for them. I knew that that's what they were working towards, and so it's awesome to see things coming together.
That's great. Now, so what do you do now since you're no longer really with them, but you just actually happened to pop by today and say hi and visit and work with us?
I am trying to figure out what to do with my life. And right now I'm teaching English in Spain.
That's a fun thing. That's a great unique experience there.
Yeah.
So do you feel like, you know, working with Epiphany Farms and working at Epiphany Farms, how do you feel like that has added to you as a person, like how your outlook is on life versus, was it different before you came?
It certainly was one of the most formative experiences that I think I've had. I learned so much about everything from the way that food is grown to watching amazing chefs prepare it to learning about myself and what I find important in life.
So. Does that change how you shop at the market now?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's really difficult to buy anything that's not from a close vicinity.
Yeah. And do they have fresh markets in Spain then?
They do, yeah. At the grocery stores, it's still a little bit tricky sometimes to find things that are actually coming from Spain. And I lived in a small town, so it's even harder just because there's, in that town, maybe in other places, I can't speak for all of Spain, but in that town it was there were some commercial options and that was it. There weren't a lot of local vendors selling things.
That's awesome. Well, you brought some great cheese from Spain.
That's one of the few things that I can't get locally.
Yeah, one of the few things that's fresh that you can get, right?
It's got Manchego cheese, and it's a sheep's milk cheese. And in order to be called Manchego, it has to come from the region called Castilla-La Mancha, which is where I lived.
Okay.
And so they do that all through Europe, where they have certain regions that in order to say that you have this product, it has to be produced in that region. So it really protects the food history and the traditions that have been going on for hundreds of years,
which we have really lost in our culture. You know, compare America to Spain and some of their food culture. How do you even begin, right?
But
do they have the same love affair with food that like Italians have, that you know, French people have as well, where the food is just such a main part of who you are and being.
Food is life there. I mean, I think that people spend more time around a table than they do at work, which is now maybe being reflected in the economy. But it feels very traditional. People go home on the weekends if they don't live in the same town where they're from to be with family and be able to eat Sunday lunch with them before they have to go back to the town where they work for 5 days of the week. Almost everyone gets time to take a nice long lunch in the middle of the day, and it's actually a government, I don't know if it's a law or exactly how
it's... Like a mandate of some sort.
every restaurant has to offer a reasonably priced menu so that people that can't go home to eat can still have a home-cooked meal.
Wow, that's kind of different, yeah. Huh? So how long are your lunches over there?
I've never been to a lunch that's less than an hour long.
Okay. That's, yeah, compared to our 15-minute breaks right. that we get here in America, or a half-hour lunch.
Yeah. I think maybe if you're living in some of the bigger cities like Madrid or Barcelona, you might have a more American-style grab-and-go sort of lunch situation.
Right.
But it seems like they, for the most part, Spaniards hold on to that tradition and do not want to let it go.
I don't blame them, because everything, you know, is so fast-paced enough in our life. If we could just enjoy our food a little bit yeah. more, we might care about where it comes from,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Well, Emma, it was awesome. Is there anything you want to add about Epiphany Farms, just a thought that you had, or working here, or... because you work so hard, you just come here and you just worked all day, and we all ate lunch together, and it was a really nice, lovely time to be able to get to know one another and get familiar with not only the Korean culture with Nanam's food that she served, but also ask questions and discuss food, and it was really an enjoyable family atmosphere.
Well, I'm a little dazed from the sun right now, but no, it's okay. I guess it's just always nice to come here, and you always run into interesting people like your family who it's just really refreshing to be around lots of people who have the same values and care about things.
Yeah, like so we have the same heartbeat. I told Stu, I said, we found our tribe. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just like we all kind of, you know, you seek out these different people and different friends. And not that we always have to agree with every single thing, but when we have that one heartbeat, that one thing in common, then it just kind of connects you.
Yeah. I always say, if you're going to be one of my close friends, you have to love food. And if not, then...
forget about it. That's awesome. Well, I appreciate your time and I value it so much. It was awesome and pleasure meeting you.
Wonderful,
Emma.
To meet
Thank you so much.
Everything is always a buzz at Epiphany Farms. There's always so much to talk about and so much life to enjoy while we're here. We're going to take a quick break right now. And when we come back, I'm going to discuss some things with Stu Hummel, Vice President of Epiphany Farms and Station 220, as well as owner Ken Mishka. They're the head honchos, and Ken is the absolute visionary behind everything that we're doing today. This farm-to-fork restaurant in central Illinois, Epiphany Farms restaurant, is called Station 220 in downtown Bloomington. Be sure to check them out at Station 220, all spelled out, station220.com or epiphanyfarms.com. Please stay tuned. Some more compelling interviews coming up next right here on Homegrown Health on naturalnewsradio.com.
Friends, I just did my annual economic briefing with author and Swiss America chairman Craig R. Smith, and what I discovered confirms my worst fears. Something is getting ready to happen that's going to change the course of world history, and not one in a thousand will believe it until it's already too late, and I don't want that to be you. After writing four important books accurately predicting the future of gold, oil, the dollar, and inflation, Mr. Smith is on the verge of releasing his next book, and this new CD covers the root issue of the coming crisis and offers three critical steps to protect your family from the fallout. Please call today for this hot new CD, The Future of Money. Toll free, 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. You've got to hear The Future of Money to believe it. 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. Do it today.
Raw Nation's Hot Rocks is the only raw, vegan, certified organic vitamin for your sex drive. Hot Rocks is made using only the purest organic superfoods and herbs in their raw, unaltered state. We've created this synergistic blend of powerful herbs that intensifies sexual energy and performance in both men and women. It's like an overall vitality pill that makes you feel amazing. There's absolutely no chemicals, pesticides, or harsh stimulants in Hot Rocks. If you already have a strong sex drive, Hot Rocks will help you maintain it and keep it from slipping away. The problem that affects even the healthiest people nowadays because of the amount of toxicity that we are all exposed to. So what are you waiting for? We offer a 30-day money-back guarantee so you can order Hot Rocks risk-free. It's time to experience pure bliss and the only truly healthy libido enhancer on the market, Hot Rocks. Order online at hotrocks.com. That's H-O-T-R-A-W-K-S.com.
rawlife.com or call us 855-RAW-LIFE. That's 855-729-5433.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancer using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
It's Homegrown Health on Natural News Radio.
And I'm back for the second half of the show on NaturalNewsRadio.com, where the best in health talk radio lives. I'm your host, Joni Cox. And I've been talking with Epiphany Farms. If you haven't been to their website, go to epiphanyfarms.com. Or visit Station 220 and spell it out, station220.com. That's the restaurant where they serve a full house food grown right here on the farm, or if they can't get it here, then whatever's grown as locally as possible. My family and I have been visiting here all day today, and we are looking into what goes on behind the scenes at a farm-to-fork restaurant. We've been helping harvest all kinds of goodies and talking with the owners, Stu Hummel and Ken Mishka, about the level of responsibility and what all goes into running a farm-to-fork restaurant. Stu Hummel joins me again. Okay, so it's really fun seeing you, Stu, not in the restaurant, and we're in this different element now with you being out here at the farm. Is this a typical day for you? Let's talk about farm day.
Yeah, absolutely. Starts as early as possible. I was kind of downtown at the restaurant today, but depending on how much needs to be done, we'll start when the sun comes up, or it's almost best farming through the night, pulling out spotlights, and whenever it's this hot out, you just kind of take a break in the middle of the day whenever it's blazing heat, and then go at it again through the night. Yeah, it seems like the end of the day, it's like you're getting a little worn out. You've been taking a lot of sun on the face, and yeah, towards the end of the day, definitely.
Yeah, so let's go through what we did today. Me and the girls, we did some tomatoes and harvested some melons and got to eat raw corn, and that's always fun when you know it's not GMO. Then you just really sink your teeth into it, because before you're like, oh, get that away from me. So what all did you do today?
So I came here, the thing I was just finishing up, I'm trying to trellis the tomatoes, and I'm walking through these plots and I'm thinking, man, you could have one individual focus on the amount of tomatoes that we have nonstop.
Yeah.
Because that's in itself is pretty much a full-time endeavor. I'm taking care of that. But checked the plots, made sure some of the seeds we put in were getting some germination on them. And then I moved some drip line around because unfortunately there hasn't been any rain. So we have to make sure that everything stays watered.
Yeah, that's probably been the hardest thing. I noticed the large cracks in the ground. You know,
it's pretty ridiculous.
It is. It hasn't been this bad here, though, since, I don't know, 1950 or something. So, you know, it's cyclic, with the weather.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, with the restaurant, what things that we harvest today, you try to get it as fresh as possible to the restaurant. So, will you start serving it this week?
Oh, absolutely. We'll probably take it in tonight and do a little fabrication on it. And first thing, Tuesday morning, the cooks are pulling product, going through everything, make sure it's super fresh. It's like, again, with the tomatoes, we have so many different varieties, and we're yielding so much right now that we take only the best to the restaurant. It's like, say last week we took 400 pounds of tomatoes in, we only used maybe 250 or 300 pounds of it. So now we're getting it tuned in. It's like, okay, how much can we possibly fabricate, preserve, store away? How much tomato can we really use or expect to use on a average week at the restaurant? And then getting these numbers down and the documentation of it's really going to help us to stop wasting time. I don't need to plant so many of this. I need to plant more of that.
Right. And these are kind of the growing years.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the growing pains in between. I totally understand.
Food's not just food. The product that we're bringing in into the restaurant from the farm, just like you said, it's not GMO. There's no chemicals that we're putting on it. The pesticides We don't use pesticides. We plant beneficial crops that will attract insects that will prey on the bad bugs that are just an example. But the food that we're taking into the restaurant is so fresh and so nutritionally dense. Everybody has a different palate. Something that's perfectly seasoned to me may be a little bit over or under for you.
Right.
But you cannot deny the fact that whenever something is super fresh, it tastes better.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
better for you. We have a huge advantage. We have the best product. It doesn't come from... It comes 6 miles down the street and it's right into the restaurant.
Yeah, and I can't... I have to vouch for that because the meal was so nutrient dense, I couldn't even finish my last few courses. I knew I wanted to try dessert, but I was not going to be able to if I kept eating. That never happens when you're at your fast food restaurant.
Though, absolutely. But. It's empty calories. I definitely love providing hospitality and providing service. And I think the care when I'm slicing through a tomato or... We just, one of our steers is, we're kind of running through it, through the menu, and it's on special right now. It's like, I remember bottle feeding this steer, and I know that it was raised properly, and I can remember memories that I've had with it. As I'm, like, putting it on their right. plate, and I'm like...
Some people probably couldn't do it, but yeah.
I really have this connection with the food, and it's just so rewarding. To do what we do at, you know, at this level and have great product, and to know that it's well cared for, and to see it grow, come to maturation from a seed, the peppers and eggplants that we started in the greenhouse in late February.
Yeah.
It was like, they're really yielding dividends right now, and it's just, we've been thinking about it all year. It's like we start planning our menus, and whenever we're buying the seeds in December,
right.
it's like, okay, come middle of July, these are the products that we're going to have in abundance. Now we can start slating menus and getting things more locked in that are completely seasonal, ever-changing.
It amazes me how you come up with, like, the presentation of the food, how you choose to present it on the plate, how you choose to cook it and mix it with what vinaigrette or what.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just all these different flavors going in at once. Do you guys do all that, like, on the fly? For each person differently, or is that something that you just kind of have like a modern basis for what you do and then you can adjust it accordingly? I don't know.
It starts in the field. For instance, your son and Matt were packaging up the okra.
Right.
And there were some okra that was overgrown and
yeah.
some of it was at nice maturation. It was like 3 to 4 inches. It was perfect for something that we do is slice them in half and tempura fry the okra. Fried
okay.
okra.
Right.
Very classic. And another quick point, I mean, all the food that we're doing has been done before. It's like, it's just classics. It's
right.
things that we enjoy eating. It's just comfort food. Anyway, back to the okra. So I have some that are overgrown, and Matt asked me if, you know, do you want to take these to the restaurant, or should we just feed them out, feed them to the animals?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it, and I break it open, and underneath the skin, obviously whenever okra gets overgrown, the skin's kind of fibrous mm-hmm. and the seeds get really large.
Right.
So I pull the seeds out and I run my finger down this perfectly lined up row of seeds, and there's like 10 perfectly, it's almost like corn.
Right.
But they're like the size of a pinhead, these okra seeds, and I eat one, it's delicious. And I'm like, I'm going to pickle these okra seeds, and then
nice.
This is going to be one of the components to the plates.
Nice.
So it's like just by looking at it and investigating a little bit, this is something that most farmers are like, oh, it's overgrown, it's overmature, it's
right,
garbage.
Right, get rid
like,
of it.
I looked at it for a second, and I popped into it, and I was like, this is going to be amazing. I'm already, that's all I've been thinking about all day now is how I'm going to do this pickle okra. And now this is something that I have never, I mean, we look at cookbooks religiously, we're up on all the trends. I've never seen this before.
Yeah, pickled okra. I've never pickled okra seeds. I've never heard of it.
And they were so like light okra flavor, very like milky, creamy.
Yeah,
it's gonna be so righteous, and it's like you don't have availability, or you just don't in a normal restaurant. You can't have these things.
You can't have the spontaneity of it.
Yeah, exactly. But it starts in the fields. All the menus are harvest driven. We walk through the fields. What's perfect? What tastes great? It's like we're constantly eating the tomato and walking through the basil row and picking different basil and eating with it and seeing how it pairs with this specific tomato and this basil. And it's just things that we've eaten, and it's like, this is good. It is so good that it has to be put onto a plate and we have to serve it to our guests because...
It's too good to not.
For sure.
Well, some chefs would look at that and be like, oh, it's too much work. But really, you guys are super privileged because you get to choose... You get to, you know, choose. You have that choice. You're not mm-hmm. told beforehand what has to be done, what has to be cooked.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great opportunity. Owning our own business and building this from the ground up and structuring it in a way that we feel is correct. And, you know, you look back on your past work experiences and there's some things that you didn't like and some things that you did like that worked well, and it's like, we have complete reign of this. It's, we're just trying to do the best we can, become a little better every day. We put a lot of effort into it.
What I like about this so much, too, is just the atmosphere is so laid back. It's so community-oriented. And I love that idea of just kind of letting nature take over and let nature be itself. Mm-hmm. And you feel very free to do that here, even as a person at the restaurant. I think this carries over to that as well.
Absolutely. We definitely need more exposure of what we do here. Because mm-hmm. This is huge. I really think it is. And we need to have people just like yourself that were in at the restaurant experience, yeah. A nice meal and had the opportunity to, come in and sit and have the food we bring in from the farm. Now you can come see the farm. It's like that connection. It's something that people need to see. They need to understand it for sure. So
I do too, because, you're welcome. It made me appreciate the meal all the more. Like, I know how, to harvest my own garden, we've grown things. We know the work that goes into it. But on this scale, to see what you do every day with, you don't have a ton of help here, but that you do have others that come and try mm-hmm. to help. But really, it's all on your shoulders at the end of the day, you and Ken and Matt. And so just to see what you're able to do with so much is so encouraging, and it's inspiring. And you're like, how do you find that motivation every day to want to do this? Because it's fun for us, because we're coming and we're going home. But to do it every day and to have that internal drive. And I just think it's something very special. And that's why I've just, really like to come back and let people know about you.
There's very few people that I've worked with or been around my entire life that do have that kind of drive. And that's why I found myself here. I wanted to be around people that wanted to put in the same sort of effort that I did and would match my energy. And I found that by coming here and joining Epiphany Farms.
Were you always a tender person growing up? Did you always, were you socially conscious growing up, even in your childhood or early adulthood years? Were you somebody that really took in moments in life? Or was that something that progressed as you started to pursue this lifestyle a little bit more?
Yeah, this was definitely a change of lifestyle for me in some ways, and it was coming home in some ways, being that I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, and I didn't have any exposure to agriculture, so, this was the first look for me, and I knew that, there's a lot of woods and a lot of timber and things in Pennsylvania up in the mountains, so I always enjoyed that, so that was sort of like the homecoming. I knew that I would have exposure to, being outside in nature, something I've always enjoyed. And again, the people here are so real. It's just refreshing to be around the community that you can really fall back on. It's like looking at a field of corn that isn't doing so well in a monoculture across the street. Mm-hmm. It's that's putting all your eggs in one basket. I would rather depend on community and your neighbors for support rather than
industry.
An industry, government-run monoculture I think it's bound to fail. It's a broken system. So the sooner we get the documentation and we figure our systems out and it becomes more and more solid, I think that we can definitely prove that we can provide for a restaurant at an upscale state and an upscale level, the things that we do. So it just takes, just like you said, it's diligence and people that aren't afraid to get their hands dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, like I said, some people I know would be like, oh, it's just too much work. But other people I know might be really intrigued by this. So I'm really hoping this will pick up as a restaurant model and more, towns, smaller towns, larger towns will be able to consider doing this. I mean, obviously people in New York definitely probably wouldn't think about this as much, but I've been really looking into a lot of urban gardening for people in cities who might listen to the show and say, yeah, well, that's nice because you have land in Illinois or you have land in Missouri, but what about here? I live in an apartment building with all these apartments, and it's like, mm-hmm. you have a rooftop, get some dirt, you can do it. So
if you have a window and you have kind of southern exposure, there's definitely opportunity to have some vegetation. Bill Mollison, one of the founders of permaculture, actually the founder of permaculture. Are you familiar with that term?
I'm not. Yeah, I know what permaculture is, but I didn't know who he was.
So Bill Mollison, he even has some YouTube excerpts on that, how to set up your urban garden, how to set your porch up. And he involves some mirrors and some reflective material
that will
actually, generate a little bit more UV exposure in some areas that don't get it so much. You need direct contact of UV. You need direct sunlight on your plants to create photosynthesis. So I mean, there's definitely ways to go about doing it. And I think back to, like, living in Las Vegas and South Florida when I did live in an apartment. And if I would have known then what I know now, I would have had all kinds of botanicals and all kinds of vegetation growing. I'll never steer away from this. It's so great, like, having chickens. I always have chickens anywhere I go, anywhere I live. Well, I'll always have a garden, for sure.
Screw you, zoning ordinance. No, I'm kidding. What is that noise? No, that's funny. Cracks me up how people are, like, afraid of chickens that are alive, but they'll eat the crappy chickens that are dead. Like, you know, yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but...
Yeah, the chicken monocle, like, farmers that raise chickens, that's a bad system.
It's a really bad system.
Just the way that they have them stacked on top of battery cage operations and the way they have them stacked on top of each other.
Well, it's cruel. Yeah, it's cruel. And you figure, I look at it like this. Anybody who thinks that they should raise an animal like that is obviously not going to care about the health of me or my family.
Mm-hmm.
How can they? How can you have a heart or a soul and take an animal and torture them in that way? To me, it's torture when you don't feed animals the food they're supposed to eat. It's torturous to their body. It causes them pain. It causes them illness. And then they're passing that on in their meat to the rest of the population to consume.
I agree 100%. Our chickens are delicious. They are happy. They have one bad day in their life, and then that's it.
It's over. then they're happy in somebody's tummy.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite animals. I like birds. I like all the animals. I want more. You know, yeah. Really grow. I need some
Do you
lamb.
Think,
I want
feel like you would have the time?
You set your systems up and you use a permaculture design where you have a symbiosis and you have, you're working with nature and you can use the animals to actually do work for you. I mean, they'll benefit you in more ways than it's going to actually hinder you. But I do think we need some cattle for sure. Matt's really on board. He wants to expand for sure.
Well, that's great.
And
we haven't even been
at this property for a year. We have a good amount established here. I mean, it's a pretty good commitment when you cut a hole in the side of your garage to attach a greenhouse, so you can walk right out into it.
Right. That's commitment right there.
It's fantastic. I can't wait to see the property in a couple more years. Setting systems up and building the infrastructure takes a lot of energy and a lot of time. And I think once a year or two from now, once everything's set up and in place, it's going to really be on autopilot. In a sense.
No, right. I mean, because you're always going to have the work. But kind of like what we were talking about with even our organic garden, you know, when you first start doing it, it takes the time and you've got the weeds and you have to fight them. But by year 7, the organic garden was like pretty much already running itself. Other than us planting, it's like the weeds didn't grow near as bad. We don't have to fight them. We already knew what to do with the pests. We already knew how to, you know. So it's like raising kids. It's just a lot longer commitment. It's like a much longer commitment because you're always going to be doing it over and over and over again. So, yeah.
For sure. Thoroughly enjoy it. The learning curve is still straight up. It's huge. I've learned so much and it's like continue to learn so much. There's no ceiling on it. Mm-hmm. It's like once we think we got some gardening, I mean, you'll never have all the vegetables down. It's like every year is a different year. And then you go into the orchard, you go into botanicals, you have your animals, livestock. It's just, it's exciting to keep growing, to keep learning. I got to be challenged. And this is
one way of doing it. this is like the lifelong challenge for sure. No, that's awesome. And I'm so glad that you're bringing that spirit to the restaurant. And that's what makes you guys different. That's what makes you not only have the best food, but I even recognize some of like the tomatoes that were on our plate when we were out, you know, picking. I would taste them, of course, because you just can't be here and not... I mean, that's the freshest food. Out the vine to your mouth.
For sure.
So I recognized, you know, some of the different tomatoes that were on different plates and whatnot. So I was just... It's neat. And I do hope that your guests always, you know, will come out here and see what really goes into it, because it really does make you appreciate it that much more.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for talking with me, Stu, again.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having us out here today for a wonderful farm tour.
For sure.
Head honcho Ken Mishka joins me now.
Now, are you going to be doing that event in September?
Yeah, we have one. Right now, we have one fall event scheduled.
Okay, and that's going to be a tour of the farm for all of your guests to come out and see.
Yeah, we used to do tours on a monthly basis or even on a weekly basis. And then this year, with moving to the new property and setting up the infrastructure, we decided not to have any tours. And so we want to have at least one tour this fall where kind of show our fans, the real, real big time fans, like what's going on, give them an inside look, and then they can see the progress in the future.
I
feel, thank you for letting me hear, but to have the inside look before the inside look. I appreciate it. I love the farm. I love everything you're doing with it. And you have certainly come a long way. And I know that's something you're really proud of. And I'm glad to see it's such a support network around you.
Yeah. And it's going really well.
It is. It is. Is there any thoughts that you had that you wanted to share about the farm?
Not really. We still have a lot of things to figure out. You know, we learn a lot every day and mm-hmm. kind of embracing like a lot of really cool failure, which is nice. But you know, I think people understand like what we're putting together, and the people that taste it, they can taste the quality and they can taste the flavor. And I think that's going to keep us being able to go and influencing people and getting them to kind of think a little bit more about their food and,
right.
You know, I think it's already had, like, it's happening.
It is happening. It really is, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of evolution. We kind of have to go, you know, right now 7.3 billion people in the world, and most likely by 2050 there'll be 9 billion of us.
Which is hard to imagine.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, populations are becoming more steady, and something interesting happened to us at the restaurant when we first took it over was it took us several months to get to accomplish the types of things that we wanted to accomplish.
Right.
Like some examples of this would be like a nested egg salad that we have, which mm-hmm. is a signature preparation of ours. It took us 6 months just to be able to effectively pull it off. Wow. You know, we could pull it off in people's homes cooking for 10, 12 people, but cooking for 120 or 130 or even 200, it was a little more difficult. So, you know, now we have that going and we're starting to become, you know, more efficient.
Right.
And something happened when we were able to handle occupancy and when the restaurant could fill up and the kitchen and the service staff could handle the pressure and they didn't go
right.
down, then we started to innovate and we started to accomplish the goals and really refine the food, refine the way that it was served and refine the service itself, refine the flavor of it. And we've only been able to do that since we were able to actually handle occupancy. So I kind of feel on the farm side of things and looking at our economy and looking at the population as a whole, it's kind of like once we're seeing the end, we're seeing like how big it's going to be and how much we have to support.
Right.
And I feel that over the next 40, 50 years, we're going to be able to really start to, you know, refine the systems,
right.
And innovate and be able to sustain and handle occupancy.
Yeah.
So that's cool because we're not necessarily out there just like, oh, well, you know, this is all for nothing because we're gonna fall off a cliff.
Right. Right.
It's
no.
not. You know, it's not like that. We're currently doing a really poor job of feeding the 7.3 billion people. It'd be one thing if we were successfully feeding some people and not successfully feeding other ones, but it's like we're not successfully feeding anyone.
No.
You know, there's a billion or a million people that are just starving. And at the same time, there's in the most developed countries, there's giant food deserts and there's people starving of nutrients.
Right.
So we kind of have to radically figure some things out.
I was talking with Stu and he was like, I said, to most chefs that I know, which is not a whole lot, but it would be like, oh, this is too much work to come out here and do this.
Yeah.
But other people I know would be like, what a great experience. I wish I could pick what I'm going to cook that day fresh from the garden. And it's really a neat privilege to see how you guys honor that ability and how you're able to then implement it. And I was also asking about your menus. Hmm. Where you come up with the recipe ideas?
Yeah, we typically just we look at cookbooks for references, but we don't really look at cookbooks anymore for inspiration. We mostly like just go and search the gardens, and we take weekly, you know, tours of the gardens where we just write down harvest lists and brainstorm the new menu items. So it's interesting. It's a challenge because there's so much information going on here and there's so many moving pieces, and then trying to orchestrate that and then get all that information to my cooks and to my staff is really the type of the challenge that it is. It'd be really, really easy if me and Stu just, you know, walked the garden, harvested, and went into the restaurant and cooked for 10 people.
Right.
But we had to cook for more than that, and that requires us to have a team. It requires us to have cooks and bussers and dishwashers and, you know, servers or Epiphany Farms liaisons.
Right.
And that's kind of the thing. Is like we need to inspire our staff to want to successfully operate the restaurant and do well in their job. But then at the same time, we need to almost convince them to take in this knowledge and this information and then disseminate that information to our staff.
Yeah, I will say one, you had a server in particular who was very excellent at explaining every single thing that we were eating on our plate. I could not always pronounce it or write it down fast enough, but he was very good at explaining where it came from, how many varieties of tomatoes or how many varieties of cucumber went in there. There was a nick and an art to that for him to be able to relay the information like the chef would to us and about where it was grown and where it was picked and, like I said, how many varieties it was, there were of vegetable there. It was it was really amazing.
Our team's done a tremendous job working together. And there's this really awesome cohesion between the back and the front of the house that's going on. And a lot of the servers kind of like, they take that information, they take that knowledge, and they use it as ammunition in the dining room.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's cool to see the different types of servers and the different personalities that we have. I think that all of our servers have that knowledge, that they just choose to use it in different styles.
Right.
Which is cool. And we also do that on purpose sometimes, you know, specifically. I can remember during your meal, a couple, at least one of the courses we dropped, and we specifically gave you no description.
Right.
And that, like, leaves you kind of like, because you get used to this pattern.
It did.
And you're just like, whoa, like, what, do they not know what they're serving us?
It was the teddy bear soup. That's what I called it. I called it the teddy bear soup. I'm like, what is this? I don't know. Where are you, Mr. Waiter? And so I've been meaning to ask you guys what that soup was, because I was at my best palate guess. It was a squash soup.
Zucchini, yeah, okay. Summer squash.
I knew it was a squash of some sort because I've made squash soup before. Yeah. Did it have creme fraiche on top of it?
Yeah, it did.
Okay. And then was basil the herb on top?
Basil, tarragon.
Okay.
It's all.
Okay, like, it was fantastic. But when I tasted the soup, I called it teddy bear soup because it's like, it was comforting and it was something that was like, you know, if you came in out of a cold, rainy day, that is what I would want to eat right there. And it just, it put me into a scenario. It's not usually, you know, I don't know, sometimes people will eat food and it will take them back to a memory.
Yeah.
But for me, I eat your food and it puts me in whole different scenarios in my life. Like, if I were here, this is what I would want to have. Oh, and cool. It was fantastic. Yeah, it was really a journey. It was a neat food roller coaster to be on.
Yeah.
So
there's like this theatrical component to it.
Yeah.
And so we try and emphasize that at different times. And we do that, you know, with different types of descriptions. We do that with different textures and flavors. We do it with different pacing of the meal.
Nice.
And it kind of just changes based on the experience and the guest. And, you know, so that's kind of, it's fun. It's a really cool part of dining.
It is. You know, it was unexpected to not know what I was eating at one point or two.
I mean, just, you know, feel free to ask at any time.
I meant to, but I was enjoying it so much. I was like, oh, who cares, you know? We've enjoyed being out here. You know, the kids with homeschool, this was more than just, hey, let's visit and work together, even though that's just reason enough. But this is hands-on learning for my kids. My son milked a cow today for the first time in his life, got a new experience. My kids got to see,
watermelons.
Yeah, I got to see white watermelons. Never have seen white watermelons before. They tasted fantastic. They got to try a cultural dish.
Kimchi.
They've got to try kimchi and miso soup, and they've tried, you know, the miso paste.
Taenjang.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's interesting, like, Japanese has, like, they were the first to be westernized out of the, you know, northeastern Asian countries. So most of the products that we know have a Japanese name.
Right.
But then when you travel there and you go to Korea, it's like if you use that name, they get real pissed
off. I bet they do. Like, I bet they do. They're like, that is not our culture. Yeah. So say it one more time.
Taenjang.
Okay.
Taenjang.
What he said. And it's it was fantastic and some steamed cabbage.
Yeah.
And we just had a fabulous lunch and good conversation, good dinner. And as I was telling Stu, it's just such a laid-back atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And you can tell you take the whole heart and spirit of what you guys do here and you place it into the restaurant. And, you know, it was just heightened the restaurant experience for us to come out to the farm.
Yeah.
And then to bring our kids to just, you know, embrace the earth here and help. It was a great day.
It's fun. It's cool to see. It's fun to go through the seasons and, you know, it's good to see the progress and see the concept come from, you know, just an idea to now it's kind of all coming together.
Yeah.
And starting to be refined.
We are out of time. That does it for me, Joni Cox, on Homegrown Health on naturalnewsradio.com. A big thanks once again to Ken Mishka, Nana Mishka, and Stu Hummel, and all the gang at Epiphany Farms. Thanks so much for letting us hang out with you and doing two-part series here on Homegrown Health about your farm-to-fork restaurant. It's quite an experience, and I've thoroughly enjoyed every single minute that I've spent with you guys. Also want to thank HolisticDiva.com for joining the team at Homegrown Health here. Visit their website today, HolisticDiva.com. I love feedback. And reach me via email at HomegrownHealthRadio@gmail.com, or feel free to like the Facebook page. Just go to Facebook.com/HomegrownHealth, and I'll see you there. You're listening to NaturalNewsRadio.com, where the best in health talk radio lives.
It's Homegrown Health on Natural News Radio.